Well, welcome back, everyone, to another exciting episode of Right Down the Street. My name is Brian Barnett. I'm the mayor of the city of Rochester Hills and your host for this podcast. Right Down the Street is our attempt to celebrate the ideas, the perspectives, and the passions of the people that live, work, and play in our community. And over the past year or so, we have had some great guests, and today is certainly no exception. Really some exciting people who have raised our collective awareness and really taught us a little bit more about our community and the people who've lived here. And today, man, I'm excited. We have a four-time Olympic medalist and a Rochester Hills kid through and through, Peter Vanderkay, on the show with us today. Peter, thank you so much for being here.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You know, everyone is talking about the Olympics right now. It is the hottest thing to watch. I every time I watch the Winter Olympics in particular, I learn about a new sport I wasn't aware of in the past. First of all, what an unusual thing it must be to be an Olympic athlete and watching the Olympics now. What is it? Do you watch the Winter Olympics? Do you have a favorite sport? Walk me through what it's like to understand kind of uniquely what this whole thing is about.
Yeah, so, it gives me a little bit of deja vu watching this Winter Games because it's in Beijing, which is where I competed in one of the Summer Games. So I see the medals and it's got the red ribbon. It's like, hey, I have one of those. Even though it's a number of years ago, seeing some of the same venues, the Bird's Nest and the Water Cube that I think now is serving as the curling venue, brings back some memories of my time there. So it's certainly fun to watch. You know, the Winter Olympics is a little bit different animal. It's a smaller affair. The sports are obviously very different, but it's still exciting to watch. And for me, I enjoy a lot of the racing sports that are in these games, the speed skating and the downhill skiing. I think I gravitate to the most, but all the aerial stuff and the snowboarding and skiing, it's amazing to watch, but you'll never find me doing that stuff.
Well, it's incredible. I mean, I was watching some ski boarding or something last night. Just the height that some of these folks were getting was absolutely insane. And I'm sure people said that about you with some of the times that you posted in the pool over the years. If you don't know Peter's story, he qualified and competed in the Olympics three times: Athens in 2004, Beijing, as you mentioned, in 2008. London in 2012. You have two gold medals, two bronze medals. If I had four medals, I'd find a way to wear them every day. I don't know, maybe that would get old after a while, but I don't think I'd ever go anywhere. Like dentist appointments, I'd have them with me. Traveling, I'd have them with me. I don't think I'd ever leave them. Is that, am I crazy to think that?
No, a lot of people say that. I just haven't made a habit of doing it. In fact, I have them in a drawer here in my office, and I never look at them that often. I enjoy sharing them, but it's only when somebody asks me if they can see them or if I'm bringing them somewhere for somebody to see is when I really look at them. So I guess, time kind of smooths that over.
We're basically the same person, Peter. In my drawer, I've got a stapler and a yellow highlighter. So basically, if anybody asks me to see them, I show them too. So it's just basically we're the same athlete, I would say.
I have that stuff as well.
Well, you won gold in the 4x200 freestyle, gold in the 4x200 freestyle in 2004 and 2008, individual bronze in the 200 meter freestyle in 2008, and then a bronze medal in the 400 meter freestyle in 2012. But you started swimming in Rochester Hills, right? I mean, you started before you hit Beijing, Athens, and London. You're over at what, Oakland University and Adams, and tell us about growing up around here.
Yeah. So growing up in Rochester Hills, and it's just a great community. Very fortunate. I look back now that the community had the resources that allowed me to train, kind of in those early days and give me the opportunity to enjoy the sport, learn the sport. The coaches and the programs, it was all a big foundation of what I was able to do later in my career. But I spent a lot of time in the pool, especially at Oakland University. When they built that new pool in the late 90s, that was a game changer for the community and really the swimming programs in the area.
So tell us what it's like. I mean, 04 was your first Olympics in Athens. And how do you know? Is it through a qualifying process? Is it, I mean, when you find out and you start telling your family that you're going to go and represent the United States overseas in the Olympics, can you describe the emotions?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of hard to describe. And to give a little background on that, I wasn't a kid early on that anyone said, hey, you know, he's going to make the Olympic team. They saw it in me. And I really didn't see it in myself. I was just an average swimmer for a number of years. But as I got older, I got better. I dedicated myself to the sport. I grew and I got bigger and stronger. And I got to the point where towards the end of high school, I made my first Team USA national team as I was off to the University of Michigan. And that was the World University Games. So it's kind of a stepping stone to making either what we call the A team in swimming, the World Championship team, and or the Olympic team. And, you know, I was kind of knocking on that doorstep at age 18 with the Olympics coming around 2 years later. I thought, you know, if I keep improving and I keep working hard, doing the right things, maybe I'll have the opportunity to try and make the Olympic team, which would, I mean, just be a huge accomplishment, obviously. So I was able to do that. I made it in the relay. I actually missed it in the 400 free by one spot, which is the place at the Olympic trials you don't want to be. You don't want to be third, because they'll take the top two. But it was, you know, just an incredible experience to make that first team. And it really changed my life in a way that, you know, I think the accolade of making the team and then obviously winning a medal there made people feel differently about my accomplishment. And I've seen that in the sport, because if you're, like I said, third and you don't make the team, you could be the third best swimmer in the world in that event, but not be an Olympian, which is one of the things people don't know about the sport, is they only take two people in each country for that event. So it kind of catapulted me into a different level, and I think in other people's eyes.
So I'm not a shocker to my listeners, but I'm not a competitive swimmer. But in that particular event, how much, like what was the time you won with there? I mean, what, you're in the pool for how many seconds?
So I made it in the 200 free. And I think I was about a minute 48 seconds.
Okay. And how much time, months, years, hours in a pool do you practice for that minute 48?
Thousands of hours. You know, it was up to that point, 15 years in the sport almost, all the way through high school. And I was doing morning practices before school at Adams, after school on the weekends, basically year round, maybe 50 weeks out of the year. So it was that sort of dedication that got me to that point. And, you know, again, people don't see all that or don't necessarily understand it, but there's a saying in the Olympic committee for all the sports, it's not every 4 years, it's every day. Yeah. That's really the training you see behind some of these people that are in the games right now.
Yeah. Now, speaking of the games, you probably have one of the more memorable moments, at least in recent Olympic memory, in your 4x200 meter freestyle in Beijing. You had quite the team. I think you still hold the world record, right? With Michael Phelps, with Ryan Lochte, Cleet Keller, and yourself, you broke it at the time by over 4 seconds. That group of guys stole the attention of almost everybody in the country, and it really became about the U.S. team in the pool in 2008 in Beijing. What's it like training with those guys? I mean, obviously, Michael Phelps, Ryan Lochte, those guys, those are household names. They've taken on careers afterwards, and you're part of that group.
Yeah, I was very lucky in my career to be able to train with those guys. I mean, just incredibly talented individuals, hard workers. We really had something special going as a relay team. And breaking that world record, I was anchoring it. We were so far ahead in that race that my only job was don't mess it up. So I think we had like a 3-body length lead on the field. But, obviously at that time, Michael Phelps was going for the 8 golds, and that was one of his golds. So it was getting towards the end of his program. And all I can think of is don't mess this up.
do you and Phelps and Lochte, do you guys still keep in touch?
Yeah, not as frequently as I wish we would, but that's kind of probably more on me and, you know, just being busy. But we do stay in touch, and you know, some of my teammates, people that I train with for a longer period of time, I'm in a little bit more frequent contact. But it is like, you know, picking right back up where we left off when I see those guys.
There's so many stories, Peter, about and with your experience in the three different venues you've competed in, but there's so many stories. Some of them probably a little bit more wild than others about what happens in the Olympic Village. You know, what's it like when you arrive? Maybe walk us through. The Olympics are 14 to 17 days, something like that. You compete, you know, several of those days. Walk us through your approach to that and take us inside the Olympic Village a little bit. Maybe one of your favorite, was it Athens, London, Beijing? Walk us through one of those.
So my favorite was actually in London. And I think they just did a great job making it kind of an athlete-centric games. And I think just being able to speak English in the country helped. But, you know, as soon as you walk in, there's an energy in the air. I mean, you can feel it. Everybody's there to do a job. But it's exciting. And there's kind of a cohesive feeling in that regard. But, you know, I think what's special about it is you see people, whether they speak English or not, or they're a completely different sport. Everyone's there to do their best and try and represent as best they can. And, you know, you can certainly feel the atmosphere. For swimming, we're the first 8 days of the Olympic Games. So we kick it off. You know, I didn't go to opening ceremonies in the last two games I went to because I was swimming the next day. And so I didn't get to feel that or be a part of that, but I watched it and then went to bed because I was swimming the next morning. But
is that your call, Peter, or is your as a coach say you're not walking in the opening ceremonies?
It's kind of a mix. I mean, I guess I could have said I wanted to go, but you end up standing on your feet for 4 hours, and that's not what you want to do the day before you compete. So
sure.
It's kind of a no-brain decision, but you know, we watched it, went to bed, and then, you know, we're done the first half, and then you get to stay if you want, enjoy the rest of the games. And I went to other events. I remember watching Usain Bolt win the 200 in Beijing. We were sitting right there at the finish line, and went to volleyball and wrestling and a bunch of other sports. So you got to experience, you know, other venues and see things. That was really incredible. There's also, you know, corporate parties and stuff like that. But in terms of, I always get asked about the craziness of the village. If you're a Team USA athlete, you're under a code of conduct. And a lot of times they want you to check out of the village once you're done competing because they don't want you disrupting other folks. And they're actually making room for other folks that are arriving in the track and field events. So both times I stayed and stuck around till the closing ceremonies, I ended up just getting a hotel and getting out of way of Team USA and then going off and enjoying. There's all kinds of events and stuff. Or we went to a party that NBC had, and there was The Rock sitting on the couch right there. You know, it's like, hey, I know that face.
The question is, did he recognize you, Peter? That's the real question. Is it?
I don't think he did.
Well, that's on him. That's on him. This is, again, Brian Barnett, Mayor of the City of Rochester Hills, talking today with four-time Olympic medalist and Rochester Hills native Peter Vanderkay. Peter, let's take a break from the Olympics for just a minute. You grew up around here. Where did high school Peter Vanderkay hang out in Rochester Hills? You have a favorite restaurant, favorite place to – when you weren't in the pool, what were you doing?
So usually, you know, if I wasn't swimming, which was, I'd say – 90% of my free time outside of school. I'd hang out with friends, but also, you know, if we were going out to dinner, Cruz and Mira was always one of my favorite places to go. And I used to be able to put down almost a whole pizza. Don't need to do that these days, but, you know, time with friends and family, I think, was probably mostly what I was up to. I worked a little bit in the summer in landscaping and teaching swim lessons. So I stayed pretty busy.
It reminds me, Pete, I don't know if you're open, but we are actually hiring for lifeguards at Spencer Park. And I can tell you right now, I get you and you don't even have to like test. I can, on my good word, I think I can get you a spot. And I think we're up to $15 an hour now. So don't laugh. I mean, it's serious money out there and you know, good tan, nice people. Think about it.
I am going to think about it. It sounds like a great gig. So keep me in mind, keep a spot for me.
Hey, you mentioned cruising mirror, eating a pizza. There's, you know, sort of legendary what swimmers will eat for, I think Michael Phelps' breakfast routine was sort of well known. Walk us through in training. What's Peter Van Der Kay eating a couple days before competing?
You know, as much as we were training, I could probably eat as many calories as I want. It wouldn't really affect me. But I found that if I ate healthier, I felt better as opposed to, you know, eating a whole pizza and a bucket of fried chicken. You know, if I got a salad in there, I'd feel a lot better. But I used to be able to put it down. And I actually think I could have taken Phelps in an eating contest.
Really?
He may have got me in the pool, but I think I could have taken him on the dinner table.
He was like a 12 egg guy, wasn't he? Or 20 egg guy in the morning or something. Isn't that his thing?
I went to breakfast with him a number of times. I never saw him eat anything quite that extravagant, but we could throw it down, but I still think I could take him.
Do you have a memorable meal? Was there something like before every swim you always had this just because it was either tradition or good luck or something like that?
No, I really wasn't superstitious, but, you know, pasta, anything with good protein and carbs, I always before big meat was something I try to get in. But nothing, there was no routine and no favorite dish. And sometimes when you're traveling, you're kind of at the mercy of what's available.
Sure, yeah. A little different food in Beijing than it is in Athens, than it is in London, I imagine.
Yeah, each one was very different. Although the cafeteria where everybody eats, I call it like a melting pot of cuisine, none of which is very good.
It's surprising they haven't figured that out.
They're cooking for thousands of people. So it's kind of like the world version of stadium food.
Peter, obviously these stories are interesting. And I think everybody, you know, at one time or another wonders what it'd be like to be an Olympic athlete. And you see, I mean, the, you know, NBC does a great job of building up the stories and you feel like you learn so much about a person, their background. Now in this particular Olympics, you cut to, to Iron Mountain to see the family cheering on Baumgartner or whoever it might be. And you just, they do such a great job telling those stories that really, I think makes the Olympics more than just a sport. It's about, you know, cheering on a family, even a city, a region, any reaction to that? I mean, I think that's something that's pretty unique and really you only see that in the Olympics.
Yeah, absolutely. And I certainly felt it when I was abroad and, you know, just the outreach of support from people in the community, whether, you know, I knew them or not, or whether I, you know, we stayed in good touch. Everybody reached out and said, we're thinking of you. We're hoping you do well. And, you know, people papered my parents' house with posters and all kinds of stuff, you know, just to get them excited about it. And that's something I could really feel no matter where I was, that the people in the community supported me. And I think it really did make a difference. And I think Rochester was, you know, as good as any community of any Olympian in the country in supporting their athletes. And I'm very thankful for that. It's something I think my success, I feel like I share with everybody that supported me.
My kids went to the same elementary school that you did, and your pictures are up there. Some posters still hang in middle school as well. So you know you have a lot of student athletes that are that pass by your picture and your accolades and your success. I agree with you. Our community's been great in supporting you, but you've been great in representing our community as well.
My pleasure. I mean, it's the least I can do. And like I said, I think, you know, I'm not sure I could have done it in a different community. I had everything here with the support, the facilities to get it done. So I'm just very thankful for that.
Pretty sure if you've been raised in, say, Auburn Hills, those golds probably would have been bronze. So that's just my gut feeling on that.
Yeah, I'm sure your brother would agree.
Yeah, no doubt. Well played. Peter, obviously you dedicated yourself to the sport. I mean, hours, thousands of hours in the gym. Who did you look up to? Who is your, you know, who are the people that inspired you? Were they swimmers, or were there other people that just inspired you to, you know, to be the kind of person that you have become?
You know, again, just being so fortunate to be a part of a good team. I think culture is so important on a team. And when I look back, the coaching staff that Oakland Livewire provided for me, and along with the kids that were just a couple years older, my older brother's age, that really set a good example. You know, they were very coachable. They worked hard. They listened. And that, you know, I just fell in line. So it's very easy for me to get it from day one, you know, and trying to reach my ceiling, whether that was the Olympics or just going to the state championships. There was a mindset on that team that, you know, we're going to try the best we can, and we're going to work hard. And I'm just very, very thankful I had a group like that. And I still keep in touch with a lot of those friends from, you know, my junior high school days. Still friends to today, just on the bonding that we had being part of a club team like that. So, yeah, it's just an incredible timing for me.
Yeah. And Peter, I'm gonna I have two questions to save for the end, but because I want you to tell your favorite Olympic memory, but tell folks what you're doing now. I don't know if you're still swimming at all, but I know you've got a new career that we cross paths in occasionally. What keeps you busy now?
Yeah, so now I'm in commercial real estate brokerage. Our company is Signature Associates out of Southfield. We started in 1989. I've been on the team for 7 years now, and I really enjoy it. It brings me up to Rochester for business, and you know, getting to interact in the community is fantastic. And I do swim maybe one day a week, one day every 2 weeks. So nothing like what I used to do. I just fake it now.
You're just like breaking club records now, you know, like at the Lifetime Fitness or what?
I'm just trying to burn off the pizza.
the skills that you learned, you know, anything, how's it transfer to commercial real estate? The competitive nature there is still pretty high.
Yeah, you know, it's a great fit because this business, you know, just like athletics, what you put in is kind of what you get out. And that's the athlete mentality for me, being able to see results. The harder I work, generally, the better I do. And there's a competitiveness, but I think it really kind of mirrors athletics, time in, time out. Work hard, do things right, work on the skills that you're not good at and try and get better. And so it was a natural fit for me, and I really enjoy it.
That competitive nature, is it, I mean, do you want to be the fastest person, you know, driving on Rochester Road? Are you, you know, want to compete? I mean, is it in you, like in everything you do, like once you're that high level elite athlete, like you need to be, I mean, in everything, it's sort of first one to finish food, first one to get to where you're going. Like, is that a part of your DNA?
I think so. I try not to let it dominate, you know, every little thing like driving down Rochester Road, but it does come into play. And I think what I learned from swimming and watching people like Phelps is, I mean, you could be the best in the world, but there's always something you can do a little bit better. So it's that ambition to strive for always improving. And I think that has really helped me in my business.
Yeah, you know, it's been interesting. In anything, you celebrate the successes, but even as you mentioned with Phelps, you know, he's had a lot of challenges. And you watch what that competitive nature can do if unchecked, can lead to stress and depression and just challenges that in mental health that are that certainly the rest of us are learning as he's going through his journey and others in your sport. Certainly very, very interesting and very challenging.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because it can be a curse when you're constantly trying to, you know, do something better. It feels like you're never quite there. So you have to learn to celebrate moments and be okay with failure. And sometimes you're just not going to get to where you want to be. Doesn't mean you shouldn't stop trying. But that's a good point. I think, you know, that's been a curse for somebody like Michael, who was the best in the world. It was, you know, where do you go from there?
Yeah.
And that can be a lonely moment, I think. So I've tried to always keep it in perspective. And thankfully, I have a great support group and family and friends that keep me grounded, too.
Sure. A question I just want to share with you or ask you, because I'm curious your opinion on this as an athlete. One of the big stories in this current Olympics is, and I don't know all the details, but it's a Russian skater who is, you know, failed an initial sort of doping test, but through various channels is going to be allowed to skate. As an athlete, I assume you had to go through the testing and so forth. Any reaction to that? I mean, that, you know, the purest nature of competition and protecting that. When you see stories like that, what do you think?
You know, it's problematic because as soon as I got to that level where I knew I was going to get tested, and rightly so, you know, it's an inconvenience, yes, but it's kind of a badge of honor too, because you're in that air where everybody should be going through the same testing. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, you know, I'm not super familiar with this case, but I believe she's 15 and, you know, she's got to abide by those rules too, in my opinion. So I'm not sure they're making the right decision. I guess it's not up to me anyways, but, you know, I think protecting the fairness and fair level of competition is super important. And as an athlete, you have to understand that. I mean, you have to understand that what you put in your body is your responsibility and nobody else's. Unfortunately, given the nature of where she's from, I don't know if that's her decision or not.
Right, right. Yeah, fair answer. All right, let's end on a little bit of a lighter note. I told you that if I had Olympic medals, my friends would be absolutely so sick of seeing them and hearing the stories. But I'm curious if you've ever had a story where it's just happened where I don't know, I can imagine being at a bar somewhere, a restaurant, and someone's talking and you just so happen, maybe you don't carry them around like I would carry them around, but like a credit card or something, but someone's talking and you just kind of happen to put it out and put it on the table and talk about your story. Has there ever been an interesting moment where it's not like a party trick, but where you've actually been able to say, oh yeah, no, I've got an Olympic gold medal. In fact, here it is right here or something like that. I know what I do with them. It probably would diminish their value. I probably would have lost them in about 2 months, but any good stories with the medals?
Well, I have two stories. And I thought you were going a different direction where at first you said, you know, did you ever have them where you thought somebody took one? Oh. And I was actually talking to the Sunrise community in Rochester, downtown Rochester, because my grandmother was there for years. And, I went and talked to the residents with my grandma there, and it was a nice little event. And I was passing the medals around, and when they all came back, there was one missing. And I said, "Oh, somebody's got the bronze medal from, I think it was from Beijing." And you know, everybody's like, "Oh no, where'd it go? Did somebody walk out with it? Did somebody steal it?" And I was like, "Well, you know, I saw it going around the room, but I really wasn't keeping tabs on it." And there was an older gentleman in the corner with his hand on his pocket, and he was just kind of looking like, you know, don't mind me. And then they ended up finding it. I think he had some dementia or something. So, you know, I didn't blame him, but he saw that medal and I think he wanted to keep it.
That's fantastic.
So it's kind of a funny story where, you know, the staff there was like, oh no, but all is good that ends well. I don't have any other stories where I've pulled out the medal and just surprised somebody that I can think of, but I have had moments. I joined the Detroit Athletic Club down in Detroit, and there's a group there called the Beavers that plays water basketball. And it was right when I joined that intramural league, and there was a guy that came up to me and said, "Hey, I'm Tom, nice to meet you." And this is right next to the guy running the place who knew who I was.
Yeah.
He goes, "Are you a good swimmer?" and the athletic director just about fell on the floor laughing.
Yeah, that's fantastic. That would be so much fun. That's what I think it'd be the fun, you know, to kind of, you know, be at a bar watching the Olympics or something and have someone talk about it. Say, yeah, no, I remember when I won gold in Beijing, and people are like, I'm sorry, what? Pretty interesting.
it's nice to be able to kind of go under the radar sometimes, for sure. Yeah,
of course. Well, Peter, tell me your favorite Olympic story, your favorite memory, your favorite moment. I know there's got to be so many of them, but is there one that sticks out that just was the most memorable in your really historic career?
You know, the one that stands out is it's something everybody saw was the first gold medal. I mean, in Athens, it was such a close race. We were the underdogs, and it was my first Olympic experience. So I didn't really know what to expect. I was super nervous, and we ended up winning that race by about a tenth of a second and winning that first gold medal. Like I said, it did change my life in a positive way. And I'll just never experience anything that I think that felt like that. It was just such an amazing race to be so close and to come out on top. I think I had a smile on my face, even in my sleep, for like 3 days. that stands out. I mean, everything about my experience is great. I did have, you know, ups and downs, but looking back, I don't regret anything.
Well, Peter, we always close out with the same question of every guest, and it's a tricky one. So I'll try to ask it slowly and love to get your response to this. But if you could have lunch or dinner with anyone alive or past, who would it be? And just as important, where would you go?
That is a great question. And, you know, there's so many answers that come to mind, but I think just for me personally, I'd like to go to lunch with both my grandfathers. They're since passed. They passed actually right before Athens in 2004. So I had great experiences with them growing up, but as somebody who's 38 now, I'd love to pick their brain on life and things. So I'd take them to Cruising Mirror for pizza, I guess.
That's a great answer. Well, listen, Peter, thank you so much for joining us today. We are, as a community, so proud of you, not just for the four Olympic medals, but for the way that you've carried yourself since, the way that you've continued to be engaged in our community, and you've represented the greater Rochester Hills community exceptionally well. Excited to see what's next for you and as you continue to make a difference in our region. Thank you. Thank you for making time for us today. Thank you for shedding a little bit of unique light on the Olympics and from a perspective that very few people will ever have. So we appreciate you being on the show today, Peter. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Mayor Burnett, and keep up the great work in Rochester Hills.
Thank you so much. And for all of you tuning in, we appreciate you tuning in to Right Down the Street. We'll be back soon with another exciting episode. Until then, so long and God bless.